So, this is a new segment that I am hoping to do each week, where we meet a maker in the community and learn a bit about their creative process and their creative history, and just generally hang out. And this week, to start us off, we have a beautiful human by the name of Geeky Faye. Hello!
Hello!
Hi,
Billy! I am so, so excited to be your first guest!
Yes.
Oh my gosh! Like, what an honor! What an incredible honor! I'm so happy to be here!
Thank you! And thank you so much for, yeah, coming on and like, yeah, saying yes anyway, sorry, I'm rambling.
How could I not say yes? This was like the coolest thing ever. This, like, do you want a piece of cake? Let me. Yes.
Oh man.
Give me the cake.
I love you. Every time we hang out, it's just the best time. Like any stream we do, anything. So yes, I knew you would be the perfect person to set us up. Cool. So yeah, okay. So for those that don't already know you, what are some of your best projects? What do people most know you for out there in the internet?
So, I think at the moment I am probably best known for my vase, my weird twisty vase that was admittedly a bit of an accident, actually. Like that continues to be one of the things that blows my mind, is it wasn't actually set out to be like a big fancy project or anything like that. It was me playing around in Fusion 360, learning the software, having a little bit of fun, and actually ending out with a pretty cool result.
A very cool
Since
result.
Then, it's been featured on My Mini Factory, Joel Telling did a video with it, like, it's kind of been everywhere, mm-hmm. And so that's been both amazing and unexpected. I totally didn't see that coming. Did not see that coming at all. So that's probably what I'm best known for, I think.
Well, that's a gorgeous vase, and you deserve all the recognition you got.
Thank you.
How things just take off like that. Like, I learned that on Reddit. Like, it's so bizarre. You can never pick what takes off. Like, sometimes you just throw something together in an afternoon, and it just, you know, front page everywhere. And then sometimes you work really hard on something, and no one sees it. And you're like, oh, I thought it was cool.
And that can be very frustrating. That can admittedly be very frustrating when you actually spend a bunch of time on something and you're like, all right, I'm gonna put this out into the world. Crickets.
Yep. 100%. But I'm glad that did not happen for your vows, because it is gorgeous.
No, that was definitely a bit of an explosion, and all I can say is that I hope that it was not the last, you know? The first, but not the last,
kind of thing.
So I feel like the bar has been set. The bar has been set now, and I'm kind of like, okay, I see what I got to do.
Well, it's all a process, isn't it? Cool. So I'm not very good at interviews, but I have some questions. My second question is, what got you into making? Like, what sort of making have you done throughout your life? And yeah, tell us a bit about, like, your history, I suppose.
That's a great question, honestly, because I feel like being an artist and a maker is basically etched into my soul. It is an intrinsic part of who I am, and it kind of always has been. Even when I was a little kid, I was very much the gimme Legos, gimme things that I can build with. Lincoln Logs. I loved Lincoln Logs when I was a kid. I don't know if that might be an American thing.
What are they, like?
Yeah, that might be an American thing.
No.
They quite legitimately, they were logs. They were log-shaped pieces, and they had notches in them so that you could effectively stack them, and you could make little log cabin type buildings with them.
Cute.
And they came in different sizes, you know, and so you could, it was basically an incredibly basic kind of architectural tool, but also, now that I think about it, weirdly intrinsically like American, in the sense of, you know, like
building a log cabin.
George Washington with his log cabin.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But I loved them. And so I have been drawing, I have been arting, I've been making since I was just very small, and it's something that I just have come back to over and over again in my life as just it's just part of who I am. It's unavoidable. I can't deny it. I've tried. It bites me. It comes back to be like, hey, you need to go make something, things. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel that. I feel so that it is, 100%.
it's something I've always done. Now, I have gone in and out of it throughout my life. I studied art at university. Mm-hmm. I studied digital art, in fact. And I've worked in a range of industries to do with kind of art and creation and stuff like that. But more recently, I have been kind of venturing into the almost the what if category. Like, but what if I did this? What if I tried this? Because life is too short to just do what other people tell you to do, I've realized.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've spent entirely too much of my life and my career just, I guess, working for other people, making the things that are other people's ideas and turning other people's dreams into reality. It's now is the time for me to turn my dreams into reality. Nice. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah.
And this definitely involves a lot of experimentation, a lot of trying new things. This is very much kind of like the ongoing theme a little bit of my YouTube channel, which is kind of the, I'm going to make a thing. And I'm potentially going to be trying something I've never done before, and I'm probably going to mess it up, but I want you to see that whole process. I want you to see the messing up. I want you to see the successes. I want you to see the end product and kind of where you can go with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I guess, the aim now. So hence doing things like product design when I've never kind of done that before. Or dyeing fabric. That was kind of the topic of my last YouTube video, which was a thing I'd never done before, but it came out cool. And like, I learned so much. So it's been, I feel like my brain has like expanded massively, like almost like the Grinch's heart. Like it's grown like three times its size.
Yep.
Which isn't to say that I have a big head now.
Yeah.
That's like, that's actually a weird visual.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Big head and big heart. You got big brain. Big brain and big heart.
It is, yeah. No, big brain. It is definitely a big brain sort of mood. Gotcha. I got big brain. So I guess that's kind of, I very much approach making from a place of, I have to. I can't stop.
Yeah.
It is in me. Yes.
Feel
100% in me.
Yeah, I'm very, very much the same. Like, if I stop making too long, I just go a bit mad. So don't stop making.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When it's a part of you, it's just a part of you. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
Oh, well, I'm so glad to hear that you're like doing stuff for you. I think that's like such a cool and exciting place to be in. And I think people probably do their best work when they're doing what they truly want to. So that must be very exciting.
Yeah. No, it is. It is both exciting and deeply satisfying. So incredibly satisfying.
Oh, awesome. So nice. Oh, I'm happy for you. That's lovely.
Aw, thank you.
So yeah, you mentioned a couple of the skills that you have, like drawing and painting and digital art and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, like, I don't know, like tips or like techniques that you found that are really interesting along the way that maybe people might not have heard of before? Ooh. Or that you just really are drawn to and really enjoy? I don't know. It's a very vague question, but like,
I think I get what you're saying. I definitely feel like There's definitely been stuff that I've learned from experience as opposed to like sitting in a classroom. And one thing that I actually feel like is probably one of my biggest pieces of advice to anyone who is honestly creating anything, and that is not to be afraid of using reference. Mm-hmm. I remember back when I was first getting started feeling like reference was cheating. Like, yeah, you got to come up with everything from your brain. Like, and if you aren't coming up with everything from your brain, you're cheating. And that's not true at all. Reference is your friend. Your brain can't hold everything. It's okay to use reference, whether that's for a drawing, whether that's for a 3D model, whether that's for lighting a scene in three-dimensional space, or, you know, creating a sculpture. It doesn't matter what the thing is that you're making. It is not a personal failing to need reference material. It is not a personal failure to need to do research. It is not a personal failure to have to bring in additional information to help you create the thing you want to create. Mm. And that, I feel like that's a lesson that took me a little bit of time to learn. Because I remember feeling when I was much younger that like using references for my drawings or something like that felt like cheating. Like, oh, but aren't I supposed to just be able to create
magic from
whatever
thin
I
air?
Want out yeah. of my head? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like that hindered me. That hindered me. And I definitely spent a probably too long period just trying to, I guess, muscle my way into like I expected my brain to just be able to contain everything. And that's just not how our minds work.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's so totally okay. I would also say it's totally okay to kind of admit you don't know something mm-hmm. and to look it up on the internet.
Yep. I love a good Google.
Like, again, that sounds a little silly, but like I have been using various, like, actually Photoshop. Photoshop is a perfect example because I have been using Photoshop since Photoshop 7. I've been using Photoshop for probably close to 20 years now, which I'm dating myself a little bit. I've been using Photoshop for so long, and yet I still come up against things where I realize I'm not entirely sure how to do the thing I want to do. Or maybe I think I do, but I'm just like, is that the
just
most
checking.
Efficient way?
Yeah.
It's so totally okay to kind of admit that you don't know everything about a software package or a technique, and to go and to look something up and increase your knowledge. Like, that is so okay. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as artists and makers to be experts mm-hmm. at something, lots of things potentially, and I think it's okay to not be an expert. Not being an expert isn't a personal failing either. So like, because the fact is that you're going to keep learning your whole life. As long as you're being creative, as long as you're making, you're going to keep learning.
Yeah.
So the second you think, well, I know everything, you're going to stop learning and you're going to actually halt your growth. So it's okay to kind of be like, well, I don't know a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know a ton of things.
I'm going to look
that up.
You're
still out there in the world.
Clacka, clacka.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not being afraid to do a Google.
Yeah.
I've recently been using ZBrush a bunch to do digital sculpting. And I actually had a rather extended ZBrush break. And the software has changed substantially in that time. So getting back into it, I keep encountering tools I've never seen, even though I've used the software before, because they're new. They're new tools. And so I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know what this does. Google, yeah. You know, oh, okay, this is the blah tool, it's replaced this other tool that I used to use, that's good to know, you know, like mm-hmm. And so there is that constant sort of learning that is not something to be afraid of,
yeah.
But to, I guess, embrace if you can. I think those are probably like my top tips. I could probably think of tips for a while.
There's probably so many. I mean, especially when you've been doing it your whole life. But those are awesome ones. I think those are, yeah, really so important to know that you can lean on other tools around you and other knowledge that's around you.
I realize that I actually care a great deal about helping people get started with this stuff, because I feel like it's really scary, especially these days. With the internet at your fingers, you can go online and say that you are interested in becoming a digital sculptor. Say that's the thing that you're curious about and you want to try. And you go on Twitter, you go on the internet, and you're just instantly inundated with incredibly talented people. Mm. incredible talent. And it can feel very intimidating. It can feel very much like, well, how can I possibly reach that level? How could I possibly match up with that sort of thing?
Yep.
And it can make it very hard to kind of take that first step.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely feel like I like talking to and kind of reaching out to the people who aren't necessarily experts, who don't necessarily feel like they know what they're doing, and they want to get started, but they maybe don't necessarily know how. And yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely pro, like, more people doing art, more people doing making, more people being creative. It's an all around positive. It's an all around positive. So it's definitely a thing that I care about deeply.
Well, that's why you're doing YouTube, right? Share them what you know. Share them what you learn.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it. Oh.
Also, being a bit silly and providing entertainment at the same time.
Hell yeah.
Because I can't...
A little bit of that.
Can't help myself. Can't help myself a little bit.
It's good. It's what we need. It's the year for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You mentioned before about, drawing upon reference. So where do you get a lot of your inspiration from and your reference materials from?
Oh, mm-hmm. Gosh, I guess that really depends on the thing.
Yeah, true.
Honestly, just, I hate to say it. I hate to just like reduce it down to something so simple, but I really just do a lot of Googling,
yeah.
for image reference and stuff like that. As far as inspiration, I draw inspiration from all sorts of sources, and a lot of times it will just be, it just feels so silly to say this, but the natural world. I find the natural world very inspiring. And in fact, the inspiration for my vase was very much the natural world. In fact, actually, I can go a step further. It was a combination of the natural world and stuff in my life. I was actually playing Monument Valley 2,
nice.
Which is a mobile game,
yep.
By Us2 Games, which is actually based here in London. And it's not to put a plug in, but it's a beautiful game. It is a beautiful, really well-made game. It actually works very well on mobile. Not all games are well-suited to mobile, but this one is. It's a puzzle game, and it is both exceedingly clever and very beautiful. But it draws upon kind of naturally occurring shapes and designs and stuff like that in the game design. And one of the things that occurs is basically a circular symmetry pattern occurs throughout the game. And I saw that and went, that's really cool. That would look cool in 3D. That would look cool in a three-dimensional shape. So that was my inspiration for the weird twisty vase. Like I saw that and I was like, how can I make that into reality, into an actual physical shape, which is of course where 3D printing is just such an incredible tool, because it literally allows you to take a idea for a three-dimensional thing and make it physical.
Yeah.
I still can't get over the magic of
that. It still blows
my
mind.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, like every time I hold something in my hand,
really
I'm like, this
is.
Came from my brain and now it's in my hand. Like, that's the craziest thing. Even still.
As somebody who's been making like three-dimensional designs for years, to actually be able to physically hold it is like, what? This is the coolest thing. Again, it's magic. I frequently, when I'm describing 3D printing to people who don't know anything about it, I usually kind of, I'm like, you know the replicator in Star Trek?
Yeah.
You'd like that. But it doesn't do food. Well, unless you're Cocoa Press,
yeah.
In which case
then it does do food.
But, yeah.
The best food.
But like,
actually.
Yeah. It's not like a perfect replicator, but like,
yeah.
If you can imagine the replicator, then like 3D printing is just like a couple of steps shy,
yep.
From that.
100%.
So yeah, it is absolute magic. But yeah, inspiration for me comes from all sorts of weird kind of unexpected places. I'm very much I will be sitting there and I will have an idea and I'll be like, is this an actual idea or is this I think it's an idea and it's actually just a passing fancy. But yeah, so much of my ideas end up coming from either just my life or the natural world. That's just kind of like, I guess I have a brain that just latches onto things kind of. goes, oh, okay, that could be a thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it comes from necessity as well. Like my ultimate picture frame was very much from I need a thing, so I'm gonna make
like a problem thing to solve, or yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, but sometimes it does just come from I saw a thing in a video game. I thought it was cool. I kind of wanted to make a thing like it.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
And you did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
See a thing, make a thing.
Totally.
The end.
Yeah.
Go, move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Oh, we're so similar. Like, everything you say is just like, yes, I am the same in all these ways.
Like, I'm like, this is why we get on so well.
Yeah, we're just same brain, split very many miles between us.
So many miles.
So many. Way too many.
My only sadness. That is my only sadness around you is that we are so far away.
We'll have to meet in the middle. We'll have to like meet in Japan or something. That would be cool.
Done.
Japan.
That's a deal.
Let's make that happen.
It's a deal. Yeah. Absolutely.
So we talked a little bit about like inspiration. And what does the rest of your process look like? Like from that spark or that problem you have to solve, where does it go from there? What does the rest of your workflow look like?
So I will admit straight up that I am a bad sketcher. I always feel like generally speaking, good process advice is to sketch. Like you get an idea, you sketch it out. You get a drawing pad, you get a tablet or whatever, and you sketch out your idea. I hate this. I still do it a little bit, but I often skip it. It's a step that I know I should do, but I am often so excited to jump in that I often do. So I'm aware, and this is official Faye advice, sketch your ideas out, but also it might be okay if you don't, like, because I don't always. I often actually use the, especially if it is a project or an idea that revolves around some sort of three-dimensional design, I'll kind of sketch in 3D. Mm. It's, I guess, kind of how I work. I'll skip the physical drawing sketching stage, and I will just kind of jump in. I'll jump into Fusion 360, or I'll jump into ZBrush, and I'll just kind of doodle, I guess is probably a good way of putting it. Like, I'll sketch or doodle in a three-dimensional sort of environment, as opposed to just
and
on
just sort of refine
paper.
It from there, kind of thing.
Yeah, I will. I am definitely a sort of, I plan loosely. And again, this might not be the best working method for everyone. I do think that planning is good and important, and that I genuinely, it's not even that I'm a bad planner, it's that I get too excited. And I just want to make, I just want to get to the good bit, because I don't find the planning bit terribly exciting or fun. So I just kind of like, I'm just gonna, and this has pitfalls. This absolutely has pitfalls. I encounter them all the time where I will realize I will get to a certain point and I will realize I forgot something. I forgot something entirely. If I'd planned, I may not have forgotten it. But I also don't let those pitfalls slow me down or stop me. Just, I'll make my adjustments. I will go from there. So I very much like to just kind of jump in. And from there, I will just start making. I will start creating. And then once something starts to kind of take shape and form, then I will perhaps figure out kind of, okay, now that it exists, kind of what are my next steps? Where do I need to go from here? And it's usually at this point that I actually go into like Asana or something and start writing down, all right, these are all the things I need to do. I still sometimes forget to do that too. But the process for me is very much one of create, refine, back and forth until I have something that I like and I'm pretty happy with. And I will confess that I am very much one of those people who can and sometimes do work on something way too long. Like, I will pass the point of this is a good stopping point, because I do still struggle with perfectionism a little bit. This is very much a thing that I am working on. So yeah, so I definitely have had instances where I should have stopped 3 iterations ago. But I kept thinking, oh, it can be a little bit better, or I could do such and such thing. And I do think that it is important to recognize that kind of behavior, if you have that, like, to kind of learn where your kind of your personal shortcomings are around, like, not just planning, but just where is the finish line?
Mm.
What is the goal? What is a realistic goal? Mm. Because we all have goals that are not always realistic. And I think it's nice to sometimes have unrealistic goals, to really shoot for the moon and just really go for something that's really, really way outside what you think you can do, but to still have that kind of more realistic goal as well, because otherwise you will potentially twist yourself in knots a little bit and not ever reach a point where you are happy. Mm. And it is, I think, important to kind of be like, this is good.
Mm.
This is close to what I wanted.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to be like, it's not exactly what I wanted. And to then kind of stop yourself.
Mm.
There's actually a wonderful quote by Ira Glass, who's a writer, about how our, I don't remember the exact quote. You might want to look it up and throw it on the screen or something. But it's something about how when you are, not just when you're starting out in something, but like for a very long time, your taste in something is very good, it's very high, but your skill might not reach that. And that's okay. And it will potentially take a very long time before your skill matches your taste. And even then, your taste may continue to improve.
Mm.
So it's okay if your skill doesn't always meet your tastes.
Yeah.
That's not a personal failing. That's a sign of you've got good taste. You've got good goals, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to keep going. Honestly, his quote is considerably better than I'm giving it to
I like it. I think that was a beautiful message though. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. When you were talking about how you get something and then you like iterate upon it, it actually reminded me of a quote that's on the wall at an incubator space here called ARC, and they say it's right there as you walk in, and it says a prototype is worth 1,000 meetings. And I was like, oh, I think it's like as in like a proto, or is it, is that it? Did I fuck it up? I might have fucked it up, but just like the value in a prototype, right? Like the value that you get when you can see something and you can experiment with it and you can play with it and you can actually see, like, feel it out, is like just so rich in a way. And sometimes the sketching stage can be kind of like not as valuable, because you draw something out in a sketch and you like overlook something, like I've done a million times because I really like sketching and planning, but like, you know, you'll overlook something and then you'll like hold in your hand, you'll be like, oh, I didn't realize that I needed to do this obvious thing. And so like having a thing, like having the object, can like avoid that and iterating upon it. So I don't know. I don't think that not planning is necessarily bad. Coming from the other end.
I definitely can agree. And I also think that it's really easy to actually get caught up at like overthinking at the sketch stage, like, and to spend too much time. Basically, a fear of getting started can kind of stay your hand, and you keep sketching again, it's not quite there, it's not quite perfect, I need to keep going. Definitely, I think it's important to not let yourself get stalled, I suppose, in that first step, because getting started is definitely a scary prospect for a lot of people. It's funny actually, because I've started getting questions, like DMs on Twitter, about how to get started on a thing, like how to get started on a project, or how to get started making videos. And it's really interesting, because there is that kind of that fear, that first step fear. And to a certain degree, there is just that sometimes you just gotta dive in mentality. And I realize that's very much easier said than done.
Embrace the discomfort a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, yeah, there's definitely, I have definitely given not necessarily tips, but just insight, I suppose, into what it's actually like. But to a certain degree, yeah, you do just have to leap sometimes. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a leap of faith in making, to go from idea to making.
Yeah.
To creation.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think perfectionism ties a little bit into that too. Like, you don't want to, like, if it just stays in the ether, then you can never fail.
Yeah.
You also can never succeed, though, which is the other half of the puzzle that's taken me a very long time to learn, is that if you never do the thing, you can never succeed at doing the thing.
But
yeah, it does take a bit to, like, it's embracing the discomfort, which is really hard.
And you're so right that that fear of failure is such a powerful thing, and it's so easy to let that stay your hand. But what you said about how you can't succeed is so true, and really that's the trick. You got to remember when you're kind of find yourself getting stuck in that fear of getting started because it's a fear of failure, to remember that you, by not doing it, you're kind of automatically, I don't want to say you're automatically failing, but like you're, yeah, like it's the same. It's the same. Not doing it is in many ways the same as failing. So it is, you have very little to lose by trying, by just making an effort. And yeah, I don't know. This is definitely something I have feelings.
Yeah, feelings. Me too. Definitely, yeah. Yeah. Ongoing process of untangling the spaghetti in my head regarding perfectionism.
Oh, yeah. Lots of brain tangles on that one, for sure. I don't think we're alone either. I think it's probably a really, really common, really common thing.
I think probably. Would you say that's your biggest struggle with creating, or are there other ones that you find more struggling? Like, I don't know, what are your biggest challenges when it comes to creating? You might have none.
So
you can say none, but
no. Oh God, no. That would be so false. That would be so unrealistic. And again, like, I'm not here on the internet to present the perfect image of like the amazing successful maker. I'm here to present the image of a real person who's an artist and a maker and a creator of stuff, and all of the good and bad that kind of comes with that. So no, I absolutely there's definitely stuff. I think for me, one of my biggest personal challenges is I like to bite off more than I can chew. It is definitely again, there is, for me, there is that, I get that excitement. I get that, oh my God, I have this idea and I really want to do it. I really want to make this thing. And oh my God, how can I make this thing? And I don't always keep in mind my own actual skill set versus, I suppose, my perceived or maybe even desired skill set. That's actually probably a better way of putting it. My desired skill set versus my actual skill set. And I often get ideas based on my desired skill set, not on my actual skill set. And so one of my biggest challenges is that I will often jump into something thinking, oh yeah, I can do this. This is totally a thing I can do. Like, this is fine. It's not that difficult. And I will potentially realize, oh, actually, I don't know how to do this thing.
I don't got this.
And like, and sometimes this can be supplemented with just learning, just going and learning the thing and kind of adding a feather to my cap. And sometimes it can't. Sometimes it is just genuinely beyond what I'm capable of doing. And that's difficult. Admitting that to myself is difficult. Being able to say, okay, I would love to be able to do this thing, but I am not there yet. And that's, of course, that's the trick, is the yet. The I can and will be there at some point in the future. That's the plan. That's the goal. but I'm not there yet. And so maybe, like, maybe this project is, like, a future thing. I have long said that one of my dream costumes, one of my dream cosplays is Samus Aran from Metroid. Like, not Zero Suit Samus, not, like, bodysuit Samus, but full body armor Samus. And I'm happily admit that is currently still beyond my skill set. But it won't always be. And one day it will be close enough that I'll probably attempt it. And it'll probably be still slightly before I'm actually there. But
you learn along the way, right?
that's almost certainly what will happen. But it is, like, I am able to recognize that my desire for this thing, my desire to create this thing, is still currently beyond what I'm probably capable of doing, because I've never done anything of that scale. I've never done full body armor. I've done partial armor. I've never done full armor. I've never done helmets. I've never worked beyond certain mediums. Like, that's definitely one thing as well. Everything changes so quickly that a lot of times the way that I know to do something has become outdated, and there's a better way to do it. And so it's like, okay, I now have to learn. I have to kind of learn all over again, this new thing, this new way of doing it that is ultimately better. When I started cosplay, foam, Ava foam and stuff like that was not a thing. It was not a thing. In fact, I remember when Wonderflex got introduced, when thermoplastics became introduced to, like, the cosplay world. And that was mind-blowing at the time. And now, like, Wonderflex? What's that? Like, nobody... I'm sure people still use it, but it's like, things have changed and developed so much that there is sometimes also a, okay, well, I know how I created body armor last time, but that was 10 years ago, and now there's a bunch of better ways to do it, and so I am gonna have to relearn. But yeah, I'm admittedly, I am... tangenting a little bit.
Yeah, it's good. the foam thing is interesting. I could go on a tangent. No, maybe I won't. But just, like, because I come from a theatrical costuming world, like, for, you know, stage. And then, yeah, like, I watched the foam thing grow as well. And I always found it really weird because I'm like, but it's not at all like those materials. And it's so hard to make it look like metal. And, like, I always found it really bizarre. I'm like, there's so many other, like, even papier-mâché would be easier than using foam. I just don't get it. Like, I still haven't learned foam, except, like, I don't know, I see it for, like, fursuits or whatever, you know, like, big, like, things that need a bit of squish. But, like, when you see a suit of armor, and I'm like, but why though? Like, it just seems,
but it also, but everyone does works. It
as well, like, yeah. So I, there must be something in it. Like, someday I've always said I'm gonna build a fursuit, so someday I'm gonna build a fursuit, and then I think I'll kind of start to learn it then, and, like, yeah, maybe branch out. But I've always just kind of been like, I don't, why?
Yeah. It is wild. It is so wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess to cycle back, definitely for me, big challenge is knowing my own limitations, I guess, is probably a good way to put it succinctly. Knowing my own limitations is definitely one of my biggest challenges, and just also not stacking my plate with too many things, because it's definitely also a challenge that I face. Is I am frequently, like, bubbling over with ideas, and I'm just like, ooh, I've got a new idea. I'm gonna start this thing. I now understand why I do this a little bit better, which allows me to have slightly better management of it. But that's always historically been, like, a real issue for me creatively, is that I almost felt too creative, like, in a way that, like, it was
like spread too thin.
I couldn't manage it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't manage all the creativity. And so it would kind of go places that were unuseful or something. And I would find myself with 10 projects that I'd started, and none of them were past step two. And I just needed to, you know, actually finish some stuff. So that's definitely a challenge that I feel like has been a, but I've gotten a lot better at. It's a lot better now.
And how did you do that? Like, what sort of advice do you have for other people who might be struggling with similar kinds of things?
Which one? The biting off more than you can chew?
Yeah, or the biting off more than you can chew, and knowing your own limits, I suppose, or knowing your own, like, yeah, your own capabilities at that point in time, or accepting that you something is outside of your reach for that point in time. Any of those, like any of those things you talked about.
I would say that, honestly, actually, beyond making and creativity, that one of the best gifts you can give to yourself and everyone else around you is a sense of self-awareness. Know yourself. It sounds simple, but it's actually, for a lot of people, it's not as actually as simple as it sounds, because I think we spend a lot of time sometimes being afraid to know ourselves. And so knowing yourself, like actually knowing yourself, actually acknowledging all of the bits of yourself can be, again, that discomfort, that kind of that sitting with discomfort thing. It is definitely requires some sitting with discomfort. But once you start to have that, it opens a lot of things up. And one of those things is a kind of awareness around your limits and kind of working on, I guess, maintaining that awareness and being willing to acknowledge those limits without it being a like a self-deprecating thing. Mm. Like being able to be like, okay, I can't do this thing right now. That's okay. I will hopefully be able to do it in the future. But right now, I'm just not there yet. And having that kind of that ability to kind of acknowledge and accept those limitations without being hard on yourself, because that is a challenge too. I think it's very easy to kind of, again, you spend 5 minutes on the internet and you see all these people who are so amazing at stuff, and it's really easy to be like, well, you know, I'm not as good, or I'm less because I'm not at that level, as opposed to I'm just not there yet. Mm. Again, yet I feel like it's just such a magic word. Just to acknowledge the ability to grow and change is really powerful and a really important tool to have in your maker toolbox is actually self-acceptance and the acknowledgement that you can grow and change and get better. And you will get better. It's literally inevitable. If you keep doing something, you get better at it. It is actually kind of that simple. And it might take a long time, and it might not necessarily always be easy, but yeah. Also, I apologize. I just noticed that they're literally doing some sort of like construction-y work outside. I don't know.
Oh, I can't hear it. So
you can't hear it. Okay, good. Hopefully it won't. Hopefully it's not being picked up by the microphone either. I genuinely hope so, because I find it incredibly irritating. It's like, yeah, no, thanks. You know, middle of the day. That's fantastic.
Yeah, the other day my neighbor started practicing golf with, I don't know what, but the loudest thing ever. It literally shakes my house when he hits the golf ball. I'm like, what are you, like, I actually was like, what are you doing, mate? Like, over the deck.
It's like rocket-powered golf? I don't know.
It is so loud. And it's not at a regular interval either, so you just can't ignore it. Anyway, such a tangent.
That's super weird.
Yeah.
Very weird. Dear God.
How do you currently, or have you historically, made money from the stuff that you make? And what was that journey like? I don't know.
Yes and no. I'm assuming you don't necessarily mean like working in a job that is creative or artistic. I've done many kind of professional jobs where I was doing something creative and being paid for it. I have done slightly less of the making a thing and then selling it. But I have actually done some, and I will never forget the first piece of fine art that I sold. That was such a special and amazing thing. It was an odd one too. I had done a collage, like a collage portrait. I'd done a portrait of someone entirely out of scraps of magazine, and somebody saw it and just loved it and was like, can I buy that? Can I have that? And I was like, yes. like money exchange like
actual,
for art?
Extra money? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was quite young at the time. I was probably like 20 or 21 at the time when this happened. And I was like, you want do money for art? Yes?
Has my dream
come? Okay.
Yeah.
I can do money for art. I haven't done a great deal of the, like, I make a thing and then sell it. But I am going to be actually endeavoring into this a little bit more now, because I definitely am creating things that I think are worth selling. And the amount of time and effort that I'm putting into them to create a whole complete package, I think very much makes it worth putting a small price tag on. So I'm going to be venturing into this a little bit more now, I think, than I have previously. But, like, I have always kind of been a freelancer, kind of commission-based artist. So I've definitely done the whole, you got an idea, you want me to do a thing, we negotiate, you know, money is exchanged and I make something for you. That's definitely something I've done lots for, and can be really, really deeply satisfying. It can also be a job, you know? It's not always great. It's not always amazing. And unfortunately, I have become somewhat one of those people that isn't necessarily like, yes, go and make art your job and your career and center your life around it and put all of your income requirements on it and stuff like that, because it is tricky and challenging and sometimes very precarious. And so, like, when I encounter people, especially people who are like, I really want to get into video games, I want to work in video games, I want to do video game art, I always kind of want to be like, that's good,
I'm sorry, but no,
but be aware.
Yeah,
be aware of reality. These things.
Yeah,
exactly. Unfortunately, yeah, the reality as of 2020 is very much one that is still artists and creators and makers are frequently taken advantage of. They are undervalued, they are not necessarily treated well in all circumstances, and it tends to be one of those things that the larger the organization, the larger the company, the worse the treatment. There's, of course, extra bonus points if you are a marginalized race or gender. Like, there's all these, like, little points that just kind of add up. But I have, I still, like, I don't know. I still don't know that I would have changed anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I feel like video games in particular is such an exploitative industry. Like, the whole notion of crunch in any other industry is called bad project management, but somehow is the norm in video games. And I'm like,
and film.
Well, yeah, it's like, but why though? Because any other industry, if a project wasn't running to schedule, you would fire the project manager, not give them more games to make or more things to make.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, make it's you a think. Failing make of you the think. Project manager. Yeah. It's so messed up. Like, people, like, I don't know. I did, when I was studying video games, I did, like, research articles on, you know, big company, like, AAA stuff. So probably stuff you're talking about. And, like, yeah, people would work, like, 16 hours a day for weeks,
yep,
like, every day.
Sleep and under,
like,
their
that
desks.
Is so messed
and
up. Like,
not see their families.
It's so messed
and
up.
Sometimes not leave the office for days at a time. Like, but also not actually getting paid overtime.
Yeah, not
either,
getting paid. Yeah.
These
it's
are
just
all
like,
people
you just do it
salaried.
Because you love games, right? So you just do it. So, video games needs a union. Like,
it really
up.
Does. Now, unfortunately, there is a distinct lack of unionizing among, like there isn't really unions that, I mean, there are some unions that exist for the film industry, for artists, but I feel like they're actually quite limited. And yeah, I'm not aware of any unions for people who work in video games and other creative industries like that. It's a real, yeah, it is a real shame. But I think, honestly, the worst bit is how people internalize this sort of treatment as being normal, mm-hmm, and almost expected. So that's kind of the bit that I really kind of want to combat the most, is the idea that your work and your time and your livelihood, your life is not actually worth that much, when it's like, you have a skill, you have a talent, you have something special that not everyone has. And maybe you've gone to school for it, maybe you haven't, but, like, you have something special. Not everyone in this world is blessed with creative skills. In fact, a lot of people aren't, which is why people hunger for creative things. Like, that's why we have such a strong culture of consuming media and stuff like that. And so it's like, if you are somebody who is blessed with creative skills, like, you're special. You're incredible. I'm telling you now, you're awesome and you're incredible. And that has value. That has incredible value. And so many people have been brainwashed effectively into thinking that it's not. And obviously capitalism plays a huge role in this, and I'm not gonna go down that road. That would be a whole other video. But but yeah, it's tough, and it is, I definitely feel like it is one of, like, my kind of personal crusades is kind of helping people to realize that their work has value. Mm-hmm. And that asking for a fair wage or a fair price for something you've created is not wrong, and it is okay. And the more people do it, the easier it becomes for this sort of thing to become normalized and expected, as opposed to the working 80 hour weeks and sleeping under your desk and that sort of stuff.
Yep. Aww. Well, I suppose we're getting near to the end. What's happening for you in the future? What are you excited about? What's coming up in the world of Geeky Fae?
I'm super excited about finally finishing and releasing my ultimate picture frame into the world. That's been such a huge project that has taken months to get to this point. And so I'm so excited to actually have it out. Release it into the wild. Yay. It's been a weird and crazy experience. So, like, that's gonna be great. I am definitely excited about making more videos for my channel. I'm definitely still a little overwhelmed by the video making, just because I am solo. I'm doing everything myself, so it takes quite a bit of time to create a new video, and I like doing it. Like, I really enjoy the process, but it just takes some time. So I'm excited about some videos I've got coming up. I'm also quite excited to, completely out of the blue, more or less, I have been hit with the desire and the inspiration to create not just a better face mask pattern for, like, sewing face masks, because obviously face masks are so important right now, and they're really a very, very necessary thing, and they will be for who knows how long. I am suddenly very determined to not just make a better pattern, but to create something that would allow people to input their facial measurements into it and get a pattern design that is tailored to their face. Because we don't all have the same face. Like, we have very different face shapes and stuff like that. And so, like, if you are someone who is looking for a pattern to sew your own face masks, right now the options, they just don't feel great. Like, I've tried several patterns, and they all just, they don't quite fit right, or they'll fit me and not the next person, or, like, and it, I'm just kind of like, this can be better. This can be better. So I'm experimenting with effectively parametric 2D design right now, which is not something I've ever done before. But I'm really, really weirdly excited about it. So, like, that's definitely a thing that's in the works now, as well as possibly doing some cosplay themed masks, because I have a bunch of cosplay fabric.
Ooh, lying around. That's fun. That's super fun.
Lots, definitely, there's a whole laundry list of things that I'm working on that I'm excited about, but that's just a small taste.
Well, they sound very exciting, so I look forward to them.
very good.
And so, where can I find those things? How can I follow you? I already follow you on all the things, but for the people in the audience, where do we follow you?
Absolutely. Thankfully, I was a smart person, and I've claimed basically Geeky Fae Art on just about everything. So I am Geeky Fae Art on Twitter. I'm Geeky Fae Art on Instagram. I am on YouTube as Geeky Fae Art. I'm on Patreon as Geeky Fae Art, which is such a fantastic way to help support me in what I'm doing. I am on Ko-fi as Geeky Fae Art as well. And I am on pretty much every 3D printing repository, major 3D printing repository, also as Geeky Fae Art. So, like, if you want 3D models to print, You can, yeah, Thingiverse, My Mini Factory, Prusa Printers, Cults 3D. You can find me. You can find me pretty much anywhere. But also, I love chatting with people on Twitter, and I love comments on my videos. So, like, I am a very interactive maker. So please say hi. Don't be shy. Like, come around and join in the. It's not really a party, is it? Just come say hi.
We can make a party if we have enough people joining in.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And we can go on an adventure. Please
come follow me. Come subscribe and tune in. And yeah, I don't know. I think I have had such a nice time today that I don't want this to be the last time that I get to hang out with you and do interview stuff.
Wonderful. We should do this more.
So, like, maybe next time I can be in the interviewer seat with you. What do you think?
Yes, and like we interview someone else together.
I think that's how we keep this party going. I'm done being interviewed. I have been interviewed. I am thoroughly interviewed. But I can be. I don't know. I think I could help you out, and we could interview other people.
That would be good, because I'm not great at the interviewing thing. So definitely, that would be amazing. I said it at the beginning. I love spending time with you. So yay, that would be wonderful. Let's do it.
I guess we're just gonna have to make this a thing then.
It's just gonna have to be a regular do.
Shucks. Whatever is the world going to do to cope with?
How will they deal with both of us?
Awesome, awesome femme personalities on the internet doing cool things.
Hell yeah. Oh, awesome. Okay, I'm excited. Thank you. This will be wonderful.
Well, then I guess I'm very much looking forward to next week when we interview the next person.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for this. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me in future. That'll be really cool. And yeah, thank you. This was wonderful. And I will see you real soon. Thank you. Thank you.
Wonderful. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Okay, cool. That went pretty all right, didn't it?